I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The daily juggling act that many Americans perform, of balancing demands of work and home, has become a political issue this election year. President Obama even spent a whole day on this topic at his Working Families Summit last week.
So the bottom line is, 21st century families deserve 21st century workplaces. And our economy demands them because it's going to help us compete. It's going to help us lead. And that means paid family leave, especially paid parental leave. There is only one developed country in the world that does not offer paid maternity leave, and that is us, and that is not the list you want to be on.
While the summit was criticized as long on rhetoric and short on specifics, it was also part of a larger, growing national conversation about how family-friendly the American workplace is and is not. It's a discussion happening in states around the country, including New Hampshire. While most employers here want to support employees and their family balancing acts, doing so can involve tough decisions about how the work gets done and how much these policies cost. Today in The Exchange, how family-friendly is the workplace in the Granite State? Let's hear from you. How would you answer that question? And how would you define family-friendly? What policies make sense and which don't? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have three guests for the hour. With me in studio, Dave Juvet, Senior Vice President for Public Policy at the Business and Industry Association of New Hampshire. And Dave Juvet, it's good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Also joining us is Matt Mowry, editor at Business NH Magazine. Matt's been writing a lot about this issue of the family-friendly workplace. Matt, good to have you too. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And joining us also is Kristen Smith, family demographer at the Carsey School of Public Policy and research assistant professor of sociology at UNH. And Kristen Smith, welcome back. Good to have you, too.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and Kristen, I want to start with you first, but hear from everybody. You know, listeners may hear family-friendly and automatically think people with kids. What does family-friendly mean?
So when people are talking about family-friendly, they're talking about three different types of things. One is for families with kids, paid leave, paid sick leave, and job flexibility. But our workforce consists of more than just parents. We have single people. We have older adults who are still working, and they have different types of family needs, care needs, in terms of aging parents, in terms of aging spouses, and as well as caring for themselves if they need medical attention as well.
What do you think, Kristen? Do you think that employers are thinking outside the box that way, or are they still thinking, you know, flexible time for moms and maternity leave and so forth?
We have many employers in New Hampshire who are thinking outside the box. Some of the employers in New Hampshire have all these types of leaves and job flexibilities that they offer to their employees. But then again, we also have some who are not thinking in terms of more than just working parents or working mothers. And in those companies, they offer fewer types of job flexibility and paid leave options.
What do you think, Matt Mowry? Who are we talking about and who aren't we talking about when we talk about a family-friendly workplace?
Well, high tech right now is very family friendly. We're seeing a lot of tech companies, and especially on the professional end of businesses, where people are more reliant on their computers to get their job done. They can do it from home, and so businesses are much more open to allowing people to have those options, where you may not have family-friendly policies are those where you need to be there in person in order to get the job done. Manufacturing, retail, hospitality, those are the type of areas that tend to be lower-paying jobs, where people are very dependent on child care but may not be able to afford it as much, and they may not be at a place that has as family-friendly a policy as someone who works in a more professional, high-tech or office setting.
Yeah, so Matt, you work at Business and Age magazine. You can probably get a lot of your writing done at home. If you're in the hospitality industry, somebody's not behind the desk, it doesn't look so good for the customers.
Right.
What do you think, Dave? Where is it easy to do this and where is it less easy to do this?
Yeah, I think where you see these types of policies being implemented more are for not necessarily larger companies, but established companies that are also having to compete for the highest caliber of employees, because this now becomes something that companies will use in order to attract and retain employees. Where you probably see it less often is in smaller companies that where there's a high overhead, and also companies where there's a lot of face-to-face interaction between the employee and the customer or the client, because that necessity for that face-to-face action makes it very difficult to offer the type of flexibility or time off, regardless of whether it's paid. It just makes it that much more difficult for the employer to implement that if the position itself requires a high degree of customer employee face-to-face interaction.
What have you seen on this issue, Dave, over the years? I mean, you've been involved in New Hampshire business for a long, long time. How do you see this conversation sort of emerging in recent years?
Well, it's it wasn't all that long ago that we were just talking about establishing at the federal level, establishing the Family Medical Leave Act.
In the 90s, under Clinton, right.
I mean, most of us can remember back that far. and you'll recall at that time, it was a fairly controversial public policy decision, and it was passed and was implemented, and employers, to some degree or another, are still trying to react to that and respond to that. But now we're kind of going to the next level. It's one thing to either offer or be required to offer that time off, but how does that impact the employee? Do they really have a realistic ability to take that time off if they have no source of income coming in? And I think that's where the discussion is, to the extent of taking time away from work. How does the employee do that if they don't have any financial resources coming in? There are other aspects of it relating to nursing mothers and so on that don't necessarily mean time off from work, but it does mean special, or reasonable accommodations between the employer and the employee.
That's interesting, and I want to ask our other guests about that. We're calling back to the Family Medical Leave Act and where we're going from here on out. But let me also invite our listeners to join us again. Today in the Exchange, we're asking how family-friendly the workplace is in New Hampshire. How would you answer that question from your own perspective? And more broadly, what sorts of family-friendly policies do you think make sense for a business, which don't make sense? The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Kristen, to you too. Dave's right. About 15, 20 years ago, we were talking about the Family Medical Leave Act, where a company, I think it's over 50 employees, has to offer unpaid, 12 weeks unpaid leave for a sick child or a sick family member or for the birth or adoption of a child. Where are we at now in terms of this idea of family friendly, having passed that one mileage point, if I could put it that way?
Sure. So that law was great for its time, but as families, as David Gervais was saying, that's only going to work for those who can afford to take the time off because it has an unpaid nature. And because of the stipulations of working at a firm that has 50 or more employees, as well as there's a time frame, you need to have worked at that employer for a year. There's many, many workers who fall outside of that law, even though it's an unpaid nature. So we're at a point where there's uneven access to in that case, it's paid maternity leave or paid family leave, where, you know, people who have the financial resources or work in a firm who can afford to pay them for that time off have access and can take that time off. But those who don't have the financial resources or work in a smaller firm really don't have that access. And so in our state, we have very uneven access to these types of leave.
Yeah. So, Matt Mowry, what's the answer, though? I mean, it could be expensive for a company to offer 12 weeks paid leave, 3 weeks paid leave, for that matter. What do you think?
It can be. But, you know, I think one of the myths out there is that, you know, innovative time off policies or very generous ones only can be done in large companies. And the fact is, in New Hampshire, we've seen tremendous innovation in some small companies here in the state. Dyn, and which is a tech company in Manchester, and the International Association of Privacy Professionals, which is a nonprofit over in the seacoast, they have thrown out the set time off policy and now have, it's not unlimited time, but take the time you need. So they don't put a cap on the time off. They work very hard with their managers to make sure people are taking appropriate time off, and work with their managers to identify what too much time off, and work with employees on that. But they expect a lot of their employees. You know, we live in a very global world, and so employees may have to work some odd times in the tech community when customers demand it. And so tech companies are recognizing that if we're going to expect you to handle something at 1 a.m., then we're okay at 2 p.m. that you take off to your kid's soccer game, or you go and take care of your sick parent, as long as the work is getting done. Also at W.S. Badger over in Gilsum, which is a manufacturer, they allow parents to bring their babies in for the first 6 months. And then they recently just opened up their own on-site childcare and started subsidizing childcare for toddlers. So they provide on-site for babies and subsidize for toddlers. So it can be expensive, but if there's commitment at the top, small companies are more than capable of putting in some really great family-friendly policies.
So maybe not so expensive as we think on the face of it, Matt.
No, I mean, a lot of it is around freeing up time. So instead of having set time, a lot of companies, instead of saying you have so much time for vacation and so much time for sick time, they're doing paid time off packages. So you get all your time as one, and it's up to the employee to decide how they spend that. And
all
that
right.
Doesn't have to necessarily cost a lot of money.
Dave, I know you've got some thoughts on that, too. We'll check in after a short break, and we'll take your calls, 1-800-892-6477. More on family-friendly workplace policies on The Exchange in just a moment.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. The Exchange is coming to northern New Hampshire. You can join Laura Canoy and a panel of experts as they talk about the state of the Main Street economies north of the Notches. You can attend the special event at the Colonial Theater in Bethlehem happening July 10th. Reserve your tickets today at nhpr.org. More on families and work on The Exchange, then attend on the Diane Rehm Show, an update on the U.S. involvement in Iraq and Syria. Partly sunny for today. Could see some isolated showers and thunderstorms across the state this afternoon, with high temperatures in the 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Golf and Ski Warehouse, with stores in Hudson, Greenland, and West Lebanon, New Hampshire, and also in Scarborough, Maine. Online at golfandskiwarehouse.com. And the Monchari Museum in Norwich, Vermont, presenting a T-Rex named Sue exhibition, a 42-foot-tall, fully articulated cast skeleton with engaging interactivities, open daily 10 to 5, monshire.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, we're taking a look at families and work and how family-friendly New Hampshire workplaces are. Join us with your questions and comments on that thought at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. And Dave Duvet, I know you wanted to jump in on that idea of the costs of providing people a long time off for their family issues.
Right. Well, I think it is an obvious expense to the employer, but even so, many employers, for the reasons we've already talked about, are trying to voluntarily initiate these policies within their workplace. Just two things relating to the size of employers. New Hampshire has some state laws that relate to this, especially relating to pregnancy and maternity time off, that would affect employers of six employees or more. So it does capture a larger number of working people in New Hampshire and a larger number of employees. And the other thing I wanted to respond to is that one thing we want to keep in mind relating to paid leave versus unpaid leave is that if it's unpaid, the employee does have some skin in the game. In other words, you're giving them the time off to deal with a family emergency or a health issue or pregnancy. But there's also some tension on their part to return to the workplace as quickly as feasible because they need to continue to get that revenue coming. If you take that issue away
and make it all paid,
you're removing one reason why employees feel a need to come back to the workplace as soon as is practical.
Let's take some calls. Hear what our listeners think. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And all of you to the phones. Karen joins us from Concord. Hi, Karen. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Hi. I work with an organization called New Hampshire Citizens Alliance who has worked with a lot of the issues, pay equity, minimum wage, the workplace, family-friendly workplaces. And I, because of our work, I had the opportunity to actually be at the White House Summit on Working Families a week ago today. It was just a tremendous opportunity to be in the presence of people from all over the country and to see that, you know, that we're all not alone as working families, and that one of the big problems is that the United States is way behind on these issues compared to the rest of the developing world. We should be leaders. No one who works a full-time job in this country should be in poverty, live in poverty, and they do. No one should have to choose between the job that they need and the family that they love. And many of the things that the people who are on Matt and the others who are talking are, you know, just right on that we, a big message was that we need to have flexibility in the workplace. It's not just about balance between work and family anymore. It really is about flexibility and that there are many, many examples that companies, even restaurants, who have decided to pay the 10-10 or even $15 an hour, provide benefits.
Karen, can I ask you a quick question? I'm interested in something you said, especially since you were at that summit that I mentioned earlier on working families. So that's it's great that you called in. Mm-hmm. The issue of flexibility, and we talked about this a little earlier with our guests. It's one thing, you know, if you work at a magazine or you work, you know, I don't know, a type of job where a lot of your work is on the phone or online. But what if you do run a hotel or a gift shop or a restaurant? It's harder to offer flexibility, isn't it? I mean, people want somebody at the cash register.
Well, it is harder, but it is being done. In fact, a lot of the examples that I heard were people who own restaurants. I'm sorry, I can't quote you the names of the restaurants, but we could certainly get that. But it was a surprising thing because it is being done. And what people find is that when employers trust their employees, the employees are more loyal. They create the buzz about what a great place this is to work for. And what people found is that their business increased.
Interesting.
Sometimes as much as 300%. So
wow.
It may seem counterintuitive, but the evidence seems to be that when employers trust their employees, and, you know, I think that part of the trust is the communication, and part of it is also teamwork. So,
Karen, thank you for calling in. I want to jump in on some of the themes that you raised. So thank you for being with us. And Kristen, to you too, the idea of state laws. Our caller mentions this. Dave Juve mentioned this. How much of a difference do state laws make in terms of, you know, the family-friendly workplace? And what are some of the outstanding states in terms of this?
Great. I wanted to just jump in about the cost on one thing, and
sure.
then I can answer that question. So when we think about the costs to employers, we also want to think about the benefits to employers. And Karen kind of brought this up a little bit, but when companies offer these flexible arrangements, they have lowered turnover and they have employee loyalty. Karen mentioned a little bit about the employee loyalty, but the turnover is something that employers should think about when they're, you know, doing their cost-benefit analysis. The cost of turnover is very high, even for workers that are, you know, at the lower wage end. It's typically one-fifth of the worker's salary to replace that worker. If that worker were to quit because of these family needs or, you know, for those kinds of reasons. So, you know, there's more than just the cost of providing these benefits. There's the cost of not providing those benefits that I think needs to be brought into the conversation when we're thinking about these types of policies. In terms of the states, so there's a new report that's put out by the National Partnership for Women and Families called Expecting Better, and they did a state-by-state analysis of all of the states and ranked them and gave them grades. And so California was one of the states that ranked really high in terms of having these kinds of flexibility and paid leave. New Hampshire, unfortunately, did not rank very high, as well as many other states.
About 30 other states, so
yeah,
at least we were in good
states.
Company. Yeah,
right. So, you know, it's not that, you know, across all states these things are happening and they're not happening in New Hampshire. It's that there's a few states that are really moving ahead and doing a lot of things, and they're finding, the research is finding that they're not having these negative ramifications for the economy in those states, or there's a lot of municipalities that are moving ahead with paid leave and paid sick time, and there, you know, the research is showing that there hasn't been these negative ramifications in terms of the market and jobs in those areas. So, you know, there's a
That's
lot.
That's the concern, Kristen, isn't it? That if you adopt too many policies, laws, mandates, that it will have a negative effect on business.
That's correct.
Matt, what do you think? Have you looked at state policies and whether they make a difference and how different they are from border to border?
We haven't. I have not studied them specifically, but I was at a convention for on early childhood development last fall. And states that have really moved forward in supporting early childhood education and increasing access in it are seeing some very positive results in terms of performance of students. And that speaks to your future workforce. So, you know, we're starting to realize that family-friendly policies and workforce issues are very tied together in terms of, as Kristen said, retention rates. And we need to keep in mind, too, that in New Hampshire, we face a lot of demographic challenges that if you don't have family-friendly policies, you're going to lose out on top talent. We're growing older. Women are graduating at a much higher rate from college than men. All of these are going to force employers to rethink, you know, how do I attract the best talent if they have families?
Again, our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. We're looking at the question of how family-friendly the workplace is in New Hampshire, some of the policies that we mean by family-friendly, which policies make sense, which might not work given the nature of a particular job. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Here's a Facebook comment from Megan. She says, I have had jobs where they had a policy that you can't miss a day in the trial period or during training, 30 to 90 days, or you're automatically fired. Not very family-friendly, if you ask me. Dave Juvet, do you want to comment on that? And then I have another question for you.
Yeah, well, first of all, the callers and my co-guests today have pointed out a lot of the benefits and why it does make sense for employers to be implementing these, which is why a lot of employers are doing it voluntarily. And they see the benefit and they understand it. It's part of their business plan and they're thinking long term. I think most employers get that. what makes us a little nervous is when that decision is taken away from the employer and it's mandated by a government, either state government or federal government, that doesn't really have the information on a particular business to understand what the impacts will be in that business.
So we will try to figure out our family-friendly policies on a workplace-by-workplace basis. Don't pass too many state laws on this telling us what to do because some stuff might work and some
Yeah, I would just say relating to the report that was brought up, I know that California scored very well and New Jersey scored very highly in terms of having these state-mandated policies relating to paid leave and so on. Those are not states that are normally held up as being a place that businesses are flocking to either grow or establish a new business in. So I think they do have an impact.
Yeah, Matt, I'd love your thoughts on that, too. We do hear reports that, you know, businesses are leaving California. They're tired of the regulations. Not all businesses, of course, but it's a complaint that you hear about some states. What's the other side of this?
Well, you do have to be careful about overregulation. Businesses want to be able to run the business the way they want to. When it comes to family-friendly policies, Dave's actually very right. There's many businesses out there that are doing it because it makes sense. And the thing I would add is that, you know, you can have a law of regulation and businesses will follow the letter of the law, but not necessarily the spirit of it. Regulations alone won't get us to family-friendly policies. It really needs to come from the top down. You have to have company owners that truly do believe in it for it to work. Otherwise, you're going to have workers that may have access to that time off policy legally, but, you know, they may be in a culture where they're being passed over for promotions because they're seen as being out too much. So, you know, you can regulate to a certain extent, but the rest of it, it needs a cultural shift to happen.
Okay, and I definitely want to ask all of you a little bit more about that. But joining us now on the phone is someone who has been looking at this issue for a long time. Nancy Kyle is with us, president and CEO of the New Hampshire Retail Merchants Association. Nancy Kyle, good to have you. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Good, thank you. How do retail owners, Nancy, feel about this idea of family-friendly workplace, what they need to do, what they don't need to do?
Well, all of our members feel that wages, benefits, all that stuff is an employer-employee arrangement that should be set between them and not mandated by the government. Our members are always saying it's really hard to keep employees. It's tough in the retail industry. Its thin margins limit the resources that are available. They oftentimes lose the employees to other companies because they can offer better benefits or better pay. And to have things mandated by the government is just very difficult for a small business owner.
So what's an appropriate mandate, Nancy, in this subject area, and what isn't? I mean, are you saying no mandates at all in terms of family accommodations?
I said we do really do believe that it's up to the individual business owner. Each employee has different needs and wants in a benefits package. A single person in their 20s is going to have a different need than somebody in their 40s with three kids, than somebody in their 60s that's an empty nester. So to just mandate something across the board doesn't give a business owner the flexibility to tailor a package to their employee.
What rights do employees have, Nancy, in this area?
Well, I still have to believe that the majority of retail business owners want to do the best they can by their employees. So as far as rights for the employee, I don't know that it's a right or issue. It's more an agreement between the employer and the employee.
And we've talked a lot already about, you know, the nature, especially of retail work, where, you know, you have to be open beyond the 9 to 5. You've got to be right there and ready when the customer walks in. Given these attributes of retail work, Nancy, how hard is it to work out family-friendly arrangements? What are some creative examples that you can give us?
Well, I think that, you know, in some instances where you have a really small shop where there's four employees and one of them is the owner, it's very difficult. You know, you may just be, your owner may be the one at the counter and opening. But I do think the retailers that I have seen really do try to accommodate, and they try to do what's best for their employees.
How do they do that? Can you give us an example? I mean, again, if you've got four people
through,
and yeah,
they
go ahead.
They do it through flexible scheduling. They do it through accommodating their employee schedule. Sometimes a smaller retailer has a lot more flexibility in how they can accommodate to needs than a larger retailer that's structured by corporate policy.
So, Nancy, in terms of state laws and so forth, regulations, you're saying the fewer the better. Let people work it out, given the individual workplace and the individual person.
Exactly. Individual, what the individual wants, both the employer and the employee.
Okay, Nancy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Nancy Kyle, President and CEO of the New Hampshire Retail Merchants Association. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Kristen, we've been talking about this state regulation issue for a few minutes now. I'd love your thoughts, too. I mean, is there a role for regulation here, or should it be on a case-by-case basis?
Well, clearly the state thinks there's a role for the government to play. We have a legislative task force on work and family that's chaired by Representative Mary Guile, and we are in the process of doing a feasibility study looking at how we could create and craft a law on paid family leave insurance. There has been two other laws, bills that have been introduced into the state in the 2009-2010 session. One was on paid sick leave. Another was on the right to request part-time work. So there is some feeling within the state that there is a role for the state to play. There's many ways to craft a law that would incorporate different beliefs and different feelings in terms of a mandate. You know, the Federal Family Act, the Family and Medical Leave Insurance Bill, you know, it's a very generous bill that's being, it's introduced regularly, annually into Congress, which has 12 weeks paid leave each year, collecting up to 66% of monthly wages, which would be capped at $1,000 a week.
That's a proposal in the legislature.
That's a proposal, yeah, it's been introduced.
So who would
annually.
Pay for that?
So that one would be paid for by both employees and employers, contributing roughly 2 cents for each dollar that's earned.
So an insurance fund, okay?
Exactly. It's as an insurance fund, and those who need it would be able to apply for it and get up to 12 weeks. But then, you know, if you look at the California bill, it's not as generous as that. It's you know, fewer weeks, less pay. So there's ways of thinking about this that can, you know, take into account what each state really needs.
Okay. More after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, an update on U.S. involvement in Iraq and Syria. Then, a conversation with biographer Robert Caro on Lyndon Johnson and the 1964 Civil Rights Act. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today, partly sunny. Could see some isolated showers and thunderstorms across the state this afternoon. High temperatures in the 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Mount Washington Cog Railway, welcoming visitors for 145 years to ride to the top of New England to experience breathtaking views on steam or biodiesel trains, thecog.com. And Center for Physical Therapy and Exercise, keeping the community in motion since 1989, providing warm water pool therapy at their Nashua Clinic. More information at cpte.net. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Veterans Healthcare in the Granite State. We'll talk with New Hampshire veterans and with the new director of the Manchester VA Medical Center about the situation here. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today in The Exchange, how family-friendly is the workplace in the Granite State? You can join us with your thoughts by calling in at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook at NHPR Exchange, all one word, to continue the conversation there. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go back to our listeners. Chris joins us from Kittery, Maine. Hi, Chris. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
I know. Hi, I've lived in this country for 22 years, originally a native of Scotland. And when my two kids were born in Scotland, my wife was given 3 months fully paid leave from her company, kind of mandatory through, you know, through the British Isles. And she also got a nurse visiting her for the first week nearly every day to make sure she was okay, and then staggered until she went back to work. One thing they found was that the first 3 months of a child's life is very important for the mother and child bond. When they come out, makes for a much happier child, and it makes for a much happier person. In the case of the mother, when she goes back to work, she's a lot happier. She feels more of a loyalty to her company and works better because you know, the company is stepping up and over to provide care for the child.
So, Chris, in Scotland, where you're from and where your wife got 3 months paid leave, is that paid through taxes, or is it the individual company, or how is that covered, that cost?
It's normally the companies. It's part of the policy that the companies have to provide that by law, basically, paid leave for the for the wife or the mother, and also what they do to fill in any job-wise, they would get a temp agency in.
Bring a temp agency in to fill in for that person while they're gone. Actually, this raises two questions. One to you, I think, Dave Juvet. We talked earlier about employer flexibility when it comes to an employee who's having a family struggle. But it also requires flexibility on the part of everybody else at the office who is still there.
Yeah, because...
Or the factory or wherever.
Oftentimes, bringing a temp in isn't just a viable option. A person might have a highly skilled job that doesn't lend itself well to a temporary agency. And so what inevitably happens is that person's responsibilities are shared by all the other employees that are in the workplace. And I don't think anyone is arguing against maternity leave being important. But we also need to reflect that the responsibilities of that individual still need to be taken care of. And the other thing I worry about when we're talking, comparing about the United States to these other countries that seem far more advanced in terms of their progressive attitudes towards paid time off, America is the world's leading economy. We far outstrip any other country in terms of productivity and development of products. And that's not happening by accident. And in addition to that, we're also competing with all of these other countries' economies. And so the discussion is a good one. And I think we do need to find some level of balance, but we also need to be concerned about what the overall economic impact of a policy will be.
Okay, so let's talk about that. And Kristen, I think to you next. At that summit that President Obama had, there were a lot of comparisons between the U.S. and the rest of the world, especially Europe. And some people did say what Dave is saying after the summit. Well, that's great for Europe, but we're not Europe. What do you think? How fair is it to compare us to other countries, and how fair is it not?
I think it's informational to compare us to other countries because we can see how they're implementing their policies. We can look at their economy before the policy was implemented and look at it after. And then you can make a comparison for that country if there was a change in their economy. You know, it may not be fair to compare the economy of Scotland, for example, to the economy of the United States because there's a lot of differences, one of which is family-friendly policies. And so it's not really fair to make that comparison across the board. But what I think is more instructive is to look at the economy before you have a policy and the economy after. So we can look at, we don't have to look to Europe for those examples. We can look within the states of the United, you know, some of the states in the U.S. For example, we can look at California. We can look at Rhode Island. They've just implemented a paid leave legislation in 2014, and there are researchers looking at that. We can make those comparisons from before and after the policy and see, you know, what exactly did happen we can't look at that quite yet because it's just been implemented. But in California, New Jersey, and in a lot of the municipalities that have implemented paid sick days, we can look to there. And the evidence is showing that there hasn't been a detrimental effect on the economies of those states or municipalities.
So it sounds like you're saying, Kristen, and again, as a family demographer, a professor of sociology, you need a couple more years' worth of data on
this.
Well,
for Rhode Island,
because
that was just implemented this year. But we do have evidence from San Francisco, for example. And, you know, I think it's fair to take one place and look at the before and the after, because then you don't have these confounding factors of differences in, you know, manufacturing, a difference in the industry and the businesses. You're looking at that same place before and after.
Well, and Chris's call also reminds me, Matt Mowry, of an article that you wrote a couple months ago with an adorable cover, by the way, of a baby with a graduation cap on, called Why Babies Are Good for Business. I'd love your thoughts, Matt, on Chris's point about the critical importance of those first 3 months of life and what are the difference they make down the line.
Well, there's a huge push right now by early childhood educators to get businesses on board as a workforce issue. And that is exactly the message that they're giving them, that the first 5 years of life is when we have a massive amount of activity in our brains. There's their formation, the growth, and all those critical basic building blocks that makes a great employee, self-control, being able to multitask, good decision-making, all of those are built in the first few years of life. And so that's why there's a push to invest more in early childhood education and daycares in New Hampshire, because so many working parents need those resources. And so if we have quality institutions that they can send their kids to where they're being cared for and learning, it's not only great for the kids and for the parents. Parents are more productive at work. They're not having to worry about where their kids are. But if you take that long-term view, which is difficult for particularly in New Hampshire for us to take, but, you know, that 20 years down the road, you're going to have a much better workforce. And so that's why businesses are becoming much more interested in this issue, because they realize they need to start investing now in that.
Yeah, it was interesting. And I think it was your article, Matt, or somebody else's, Dave Duvay, I'll ask you this. Either Matt or the other writer said there's a lot of focus between, you know, businesses mentoring high school students and so forth. But some people say that's almost too late. You need to start way back, you know, kindergarten.
I think that's true. I read Matt's article, too, which was very well written. And I think a lot of businesses get that. I mean, you know, a lot of businesses are already implementing these family-friendly policies. Some have had them for years. So it's not exactly a new issue. I think where the rub is now for those companies that aren't doing it, whether it's because they haven't been educated or because they just don't feel like it's economically feasible, it comes down to who's going to pay for it, the taxpayer, the individual employee through the purchase of some short-term insurance policy, or the employer.
Yeah, that's where the rubber hits the road then. Who's going to pay for it? And also, what role, if any, the state plays in terms of regulation? We've heard different opinions this hour about more or less regulation is needed. Let's take another call, and Jonathan joins us from Manchester. Hi, Jonathan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I've had to find it somewhat humorous when your guests mentioned the job exoduses from New Jersey and California, as if New Hampshire's lack of regulation and poor minimum wage has actually caused jobs to flood into the state, which we know isn't true. I just had to say, you know, with this quality of life, you're saying, you know, that a lot of times, if, you know, the employers have to be able to, that the great economy we've had is because of lack of regulation and lack of these stipulations for families. And it just reminds me of the argument when I was younger, growing up in New Hampshire, and everyone talked about how great quality of life was in this country, so much better than Europe. And I was brought over in 1990 to Poland, which was still communist at the time. And I realized that people there, even the poorest people, didn't even have to worry about panicking about having a home or eating basic foods. They didn't have a whole lot of the frills that we had, but quality of life. And this is one of those quality of life issues where a family can actually spend time raising their kid. And we have this big issue with taking care of other people's children in this state, particularly not wanting to pay taxes for education and such. And we just have to be responsible to each other at this
point. So, Jonathan, it's not just about cranking out an economy. It's about quality of life, family time, and so forth. You know, I wonder what you think about this, Kristen, that we can't just measure all this on a dollar-by-dollar basis, productivity, GDP, whatever.
Yeah, I agree with what Jonathan was saying. In terms of quality of life, these are quality of life issues. I did some research in the States. In 2009, we interviewed 500 working parents, and one of the things we found was that employees are making decisions based on whether they have access to these workplace policies and job flexibility. A good share of the respondents said they were passing up promotions because of the job flexibility that they currently had. So they didn't want to lose that flexibility. And so these are issues that are really important to New Hampshire residents. And then I also just want to mention that, yes, there are states that are doing this voluntarily, and I applaud them. But in the end, about 44% of working parents in New Hampshire have access to paid parental or family leave. And so I think our state can do better than
44%.
Right, 44% of the working parents.
So not even half.
Not even half. So we can leave this up to individual companies and have uneven access and about 44%, less than half. Or we can create policies that give a little nudge to employers and try to lift that up to a higher percentage.
Well, here's another question that we haven't really dug into yet. Somebody mentioned earlier corporate culture and Matt Mowry. Another piece of this puzzle is that sometimes companies have good policies to take care of a sick parent or a sick child or time off for a birth or an adoption, but employees don't feel comfortable taking them. They feel like they'll be looked down upon, that they'll miss out on promotions, that people won't think that they're serious. So I wonder what you think about that piece of it, Matt.
Absolutely. There has to be teeth behind all these policies. You can have a policy in place in order to look more attractive, but if managers aren't following them or are pressuring employees not to take them, if, you know, employees are smart, they'll catch on as to whether or not it's really in their best interest to take advantage of these policies if they feel their manager isn't going to back them. And in companies where these are really working, and it comes, as I said, from the top down, where the people in charge realize that they put these policies in place to have them fall because they're going to attract the best workers, and they want the best environment for their workers. And let's not be mistaken. These are not companies that are doing it for kumbaya, let's hold hand moments. There's real economic value behind them. They want to retain the best. They want to attract the best. And they know to do that, they need these kind of policies in place for their particular business. And that's why they've made those decisions.
And here's another question that we haven't really gotten to yet. Dave Juve, this is for you. We've talked a lot about employer, employee, company policy, and so forth. What about the other folks at work? I mean, if I have, you know, three kids and I'm always having to leave early because there's always some sort of crisis, and then the person next to me is maybe in their mid-20s and they don't have any of those issues, are they going to resent me heading out all the time? I mean, if you have these great policies on the books, does it breed resentment among workers who don't take advantage of them?
No, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I suppose it could. I think it probably depends a lot on the environment within that individual workplace and whether people, the corporate environment or the company environment is to work as a team. It probably depends on whether there's a perception that that individual that's leaving is getting the job done, or whether they're just kind of leaving and leaving it up to everyone else to fill in the gap. I think it probably just depends a lot on what the environment within an individual company is. I know in our shop, we've had a number of people out at different times for maternity leave, and we all pulled together. You know, we're all very supportive, and that wasn't an issue at all.
Okay, let's take one more call if we could. Rebecca's calling from Gilsum. Hi, Rebecca. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I'm calling actually as a family owner from a business that has been spending quite a few years working on having family-friendly policies. And I was actually out in D.C. last week for the summit. And I had an opportunity to hear from a lot of businesses that had some really inspiring policies. And I think that there really is a balance between what the government can enforce and what a business really should be able to do based on what the employees need. So I think having mandatory paid sick leave is really important. That's something that everyone should have. But then figuring out how to work with each of the individual employees' needs is really important in that employer-employee relationship, particularly around flexibility and supporting new mothers and supporting actually children, not just the employees.
So a balancing act. And again, you were at that summit last week. That's interesting. We've heard from two people so far. Thank you very much for calling in. Where do you think this is going to go, Kristen, in the end? What are we going to be talking about 10 years in terms of this issue?
Oh, that's such a great question.
In 30 seconds or less.
Yeah, I wish I had a crystal ball. I think that we will still be talking about these same issues. I don't think they're going to go away. And I think the policy road is long and arduous, and you know there's a lot of different people who have they're very invested in these things, the employers, the employees, and the government. And so I think we'll be grappling with this a little longer.
Okay, all of you, thank you very much for coming in. Kristen Smith, Matt Mowry, Dave Juve, thanks for giving us your time. We appreciate
thank you.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our interns are James Pouliot and Renee Taylor. Theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, we vet veterans' health care. Reports of long wait times and false record-keeping at veterans' facilities have rocked the country, leading to resignations at the Department of Veterans Affairs and a system-wide audit to get to the root of the problems. We'll talk with New Hampshire veterans and a top VA official here about how well this state is doing. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show is next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Popolo in Bellows Falls, presenting an all-you-can-eat barbecue dinner with music from the Milk House Heaters and the Meteor Shades on Friday, the 4th of July. PopoloMeansPeople.com. And from M&C Clothing and Gifts in Nashua, with expanded offerings, including recycled clothing for men, women, and teens, plus fair trade and green products, online at MotherSays.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. An al-Qaeda breakaway group repelling government forces in Tikrit declared the creation of a new caliphate yesterday. The Islamic State of Iraq and Syria announced it will now be known as the Islamic State. Meanwhile, Russia has sent war.